hypnotized for a time, sedated, studied, and pitied. Outlandish theories abounded about what she'd endured on that Omaha street corner, but there was no explaining the mishap, using the science of the late 19th century. A few suggested sorcery, which had always been the explanation given to advanced science by those who could not begin to understand what they had seen from a limited point of reference or experience. As for Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner, he was on his way to a new destination. An ideal subject, one report said, due to his intellect and where he happened to have fallen in the time stream. The perfect candidate, read another communique in choosing him as guinea pig. The final decision had termed him the logical choice, ideally suited in body and spirit, and more importantly, mind. Out of all the other men, women, and children, the madmen and the brilliant, the young and the old, the weak of mind and strong of spirit, out of all of those alive in the United States of America during that November month of 1896, Tanner had been the one chosen. Chosen to make a pilgrimage. A pilgrimage to hell. Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, Jeff Baker, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands 43, Dark Emblem.
Wherever you want to lead, Ryan.
J.B. Dix had said this many long days ago, and as Ryan Carter now regained his senses, grateful this latest Matran's journey hadn't invoked the nightmares that usually came during the fantastic quantum journeys, he found himself dwelling on the words. What had brought the words to mind was the color of the walls surrounding him, armaglass walls of milky, colorless gray. Unless his memory was starting to slip, the walls of the chamber he was now resting within were exactly the same as the Matran's unit beneath that sticky-infested pest hole hospital in Carolina. The light in the hexagonal-shaped chamber seemed to be impossibly bright, and his head was pounding, as if an unknown assailant had shoved a lighted candle into the open eye socket of his face and twisted down, driving the flame both into the frontal lobe of his brain and the optic nerve of his remaining good eye. The white-hot light had begun to slowly fade into a more reasonable wattage. Through the spots dancing in front of his vision, Ryan was able to make out the forms of his companions, all six of them in various prone positions on the polished floor around him.
Oh, looks like we're calling North Carolina home again.
Not much changed.
Since they knew the area, and not a great deal of time had passed since their last visit to the complex, a quick rec soon found the group out of the chamber and into a small white anteroom located outside the armaglass door. As before, an ordinary desk with a computer and monitor rested directly across from the observation window of the gateway. Everyone kept their hardware ready as they crossed the room to another door, which they knew to be made of painted wood with a simple bronze doorknob. There were no high-tech locking systems or security keypads. No apparent locks of any kind. Maintaining a triple red alert, they then entered the Matran's control room, which was also still intact. Ryan held up a hand and all paused, listening and waiting. Things appeared to be quiet and safe.
We have two choices.
No one replied. They knew the options. Try Carolina's hospitality again, or take the risk of another gateway jump. Neither was particularly appealing.
Any of you feel strongly about picking one over the other?
Your call.
Doesn't matter to me.
Well, for now, let's check the rest of the area. Make sure we don't have any company.
Ryan, on point, took a moment to glance back at his little group. They were all good friends, every last one of them. No, more than friends. Dean was his biological son, and Christy his soulmate. But the others were just as important in the tangled web that was his life. They were family, more so than Ryan's blood kin back in the mountains of West Virginia. Most of the relatives who shared the Carter name were long chilled, dead and buried. His murderous brother Harvey had cowardly challenged a young Ryan and taken his left eye, leaving the disfigured and maimed boy for dead. His adulterous stepmother Rachel, who'd seen to the death of Ryan's father, Lord Carter, had then, in an act of taboo lust, slept with the insane Harvey. His nephew Jabez had seen the power and station of the Carter name as a direct route to the domination of others and the rape of helpless young women and children. Ryan had claimed Harvey and had seen to chilling his mad brother personally, while Doc Tanner's weapon had taken Lady Rachel. Christy had killed Jabez with her bare hands after he'd attempted to sodomize her. When the bloody combat was over, Ryan had left his nephew Nathan, who'd been sired by his murdered older brother Morgan, in charge. Nathan Freeman dropped the surname Carter during his subsequent banishment, a banishment Ryan himself had shared for many long years. Ryan had come home for his reckoning and cleaned house, later finding Nathan and installing him as the new Baron of Front Royal. The raven-haired savior of Front Royal had no desire to rule the Ville. He merely wanted his name cleared and his father's memory respectfully restored. With the diseased darkness of Harvey Carter vanquished, both of the One-Eyed Warrior's wishes were now a reality. His fingertips traced the deep scar that lined the right side of his face as he walked through the hallways of the hidden hospital complex. Every time he looked in the mirror at his rugged features, Harvey's handiwork was there, twin disfigurements looking back at him, one stretching from forehead to cheek, and the other hidden away, a ruin of an eye socket, still open and raw, which Ryan kept covered with a scuffed leather patch. The final encounter with Harvey and his madness seemed as recent as yesterday, Ryan mused as he shrugged his broad shoulders. The movement made the long white scarf around his neck shift, and he reached up automatically to adjust it. Both ends of the scarf were weighted, a simple measure of extra security that had saved his life numerous times when opponents believed him to be weaponless. The last time the companions had been at this particular juncture of the Deathlands, there had been some concern among the group about heading north across land on foot. They were close to the old state line boundary and could pass through the forests of Virginia to the state's western cousin to personally check up on the status of the surviving members of the House of Carter. Ryan had been privy to rumors that the status quo he'd left behind years ago was no longer in place. He honestly wasn't sure why he even cared, since he'd chosen to reject his heritage of wealth and finery to find his own individual path. Still, ammunition was at an all-time low for the group's array of blasters, and most of their jack had been previously exhausted in freedom. While they'd been able to replenish some hardware along the way since then, their scavenging there hadn't been nearly enough. No, a long road trip across two states was the last thing wanted or needed. Front Royal would have to wait until they'd found a secure spot to rest up in, and he already knew this stretch of Carolina, with the high mutant population, wasn't going to be their safe haven. The odor came wafting in like a runaway pack of scream wings as the group stepped out in the hall that led to the stairwell. The strong smell of the fire the muties had lighted in a previous attack became stronger, along with the rancid smell of the corpses Ryan and his friends had chilled days earlier. The stench of the hallway of death, where the dead stickies were scattered, was foul, making them all glad they weren't staying in the secret complex. As they walked, JB took out a small drawstring pouch from one of the many pockets that lined the inside of his well-worn leather jacket. From the denim blue sack came a long, thin black cheroot, crudely rolled. The armorer took a moment to sniff the tobacco stick with a deep sigh.
Where in the hell did you get that?
What?
Mildred Wyeth gave an exaggerated point with her right index finger at the cheroot JB was holding.
That?
Had him tucked away. I forgot that I'd picked up a sack at the tobacco shop in the Freedom Mall.
The armorer stuck the cigar into the corner of his mouth.
Kind of funny that us being back here jogged my memory. North Carolina is tobacco country, remember?
I've tried to forget. Smoking's a filthy habit. Public smoking was banned in many places during the 1990s, one of the few good things to come out of that final era.
That was a long time ago. Lots changed since then.
JB took out a silver-plated Zippo lighter. Ryan was glad the smoke from the cheroot was behind him, blowing in the opposite direction.